Hi everyone, I'm Nils Thomassen, equity research analyst and partner at Fearnley Securities, covering the shipping and energy infrastructure sectors. Welcome to Capital Link's deep dive webinar series, where we engage in discussions with industry leaders. Today, I'm delighted to host Gerry Kalogiratos, CEO of Capital Clean Energy Carriers. Together, we'll explore CCEC's operations, market outlook, and strategic initiatives guided by a comprehensive list of questions. Before we begin, a brief company introduction. Capital Clean Energy Carriers trades on NASDAQ under the ticker symbol CCEC. It's an international shipping company and leading platform of gas carriage solutions with a focus on the energy transition. CCEC's on-the-water fleet includes 20 high-specification vessels, including 12 latest-generation LNGCs and 8 legacy Neo-Panamax container vessels, of which 5 are to be sold in the first quarter of 2025. In addition, CCEC's under-construction fleet includes 6 latest-generation LNGCs, 6 dual-fuel MGCs, and 4 handy gas carriers, also capable of carrying liquid CO2. These vessels will be delivered from the first quarter of 2026 to the third quarter of 2027. Kindly note that this discussion is strictly for informational and educational purposes and should not be relied upon. It does not constitute an offer to buy or sell securities or investment advice or any advice of that kind. So, with that out of the way, Gerry, I thought we maybe start off with Capital and the history, as Capital is no new name for the shipping investor space. So perhaps you could just give us a brief overview of what Capital has been and the path and rationale to what Capital is today.
Hi Nils, thank you for doing this. It's great to be here, and Capital Link, thank you for hosting us today. Yes, you're right, Nils. Capital is not a new name to the shipping universe. The company has been listed since 2007, and had been known until August of this year as Capital Product Partners, until it's changed its name to Capital Clean Energy Carriers. It is, of course, important to be aware of the history if you want the consistency of the company during the previous decades. We have been paying nonstop dividends to our shareholders for 69 consecutive quarters, so since our IPO. I think this amounts to just about over $1 billion in dividends. You know, given the shipping cycles that we have been through, not many companies can boast of such track record. And importantly, the company has always kept a very strong balance sheet, has never restructured any loans or obligations, and has been repaying debt on time or ahead of schedule. This is the foundation, if you want, of the company, but it's quite important to remember it. Since this is the history of the company for the last 70 years. Now, product tankers was the core of our business between 2007 and 2017, while we diversified in the past into other income-generating shipping segments such as containers, crude tankers, dry cargo, and that was mostly until 2018 when we spun off the crude and product business into a new entity, Diamond S Shipping, which became public on the back of the spin-off. And then Diamond S Shipping merged with the company that is today International Seaways. So that allowed us to focus mostly on container assets and from 2021 onwards into large LNG carriers. Now, just over 12 months ago, we decided to pivot fully into gas transportation with the acquisition of an additional 11 LNG carriers. That is in addition to the seven LNG carriers that we already possessed. This was a transformational transaction, and it was financed by a recapitalization of the company by $500 million rights issue, which was fully underwritten at the time by our core shareholder, Capital Maritime. And it came together with a commitment to divest of our container fleet and recycle that capital into our strategic focus, which is gas carriers. Of course, you will ask why gas? Well, we have a strong conviction that LNG and gas will be the cornerstone of the energy transition. We are moving away from fossil fuels towards more sustainable energy sources. And that is fundamental to achieving the net zero emissions goal. We believe that LNG is going to play a very important role as a bridge fuel. It's the primary source of energy, at least in the short term, that can accelerate this energy transition. LNG, as you know, has a lower carbon emissions profile and has a distinct advantage in industrial decarbonization, especially when replacing coal. Natural gas is anywhere between 50 to 70% less emits less CO2. Importantly, there is an active existing market for the commodity, and the infrastructure is in place. It can also act as an important backup for clean power generation and renewables that is providing power on demand when renewable production ebbs or falls short. In our industry, it's of course a hard to decarbonize industry. As we all know, it's very energy intensive across long-haul voyages. Again, we think that LNG, at least in the short to medium term, will be a winner in replacing or partly replacing fuel oil. I think we have seen that already, as many of the new building orders also in other segments have been for LNG dual fuel ships. These are the reasons why we pivoted towards gas. I think we have been also quite fast in executing on this strategy since. I mean, it's just about 12 months since we completed the recapitalization. So what we did first was focus on divesting the container vessels. Since December last year, we have divested of 12 container vessels and one dry bulk vessel. That yielded around 800 million in proceeds. Then we went on to order 10 mid-sized gas carriers with direct exposure to energy transition cargoes such as liquid CO2 or ammonia and of course LPG, for a quarter of $1 billion. Importantly, in August of this year, we moved the corporate structure away from an MLP to a full C corp structure with transparent corporate governance and of course retaining the listing on the Nasdaq. Last but not least, we changed the name of the company to Capital Clean Energy Carriers, which we believe more accurately reflects the strategic pivot towards gas, but also our, if you want, the strategic positioning with regard to energy transition gas cargoes as these trends emerge. So in summary, a lot has changed in the last year, but some things remain the same, of course. The company has the same core sponsor. Capital Maritime retains substantial holding in CCEC. It's largely the same management. Of course, people have changed, but for example, I have been around since the 2007 IPO. I joined the company in 2005, so for me, it's also, a very personal matter, but being close to this company as I have seen it grow. But also, if you want, the core disciplines when it comes to the balance sheet, how we navigate shipping markets. This is very much in our DNA, and we think it will be helpful navigating markets ahead under a new strategy.
Very good, Jerry, and thank you for a good overview of the company and the history. I think we can start off with LNG, because right now the bull spot and term markets are depressed. I think we see that as a combination of reasons, but obviously a lot of fleet growth not met by liquefaction capacity yet. And then you have high gas prices in Europe producing long-haul freight, and also you have degradation in gas prices, which is not incentivizing storage. And obviously you're shielded from that in the short term, because you don't have any open positions until 26 from the current fleet, and also you have the new builds coming on then. But how do you see those factors developing in the meantime? Sort of where do you see the market now in 2026 when you have open positions?
Nils, yes, you are making a good point. I think this market surprised everyone with its weakness, especially given the season. In the summer, if anything, in early summer, we had some good activity in rates, and we were looking at potentially a good market. But we now have effectively a perfect storm of reasons why affecting the LNG spot market. As you correctly point out, we don't have any exposure really. I mean, our 12 ships in the water are fixed on long-term charters. They have another 7 years remaining charter duration and about $2.4 billion in contracted revenues. And our first open delivery is in Q1 26. But in the meantime, we have liquefaction projects that are late. And that means that you have a number of project ships that are out there in the market being relet in the spot market, putting pressure as we simply have too many ships around. We have vessels being redelivered from long-term contracts, especially steam turbine vessels that are also seeking employment at almost any rate. As you pointed out, the current pricing curve does not help as it's not conducive to floating storage. And then we have seen very high prices of the commodity and very small or almost non-existent arbitrage opportunity. And if anything, US producers, especially, but also other producers, are very much incentivized to export to Europe, given the firm pricing, which obviously, again, given the short-term nature or the shorter haul nature of the business, is not good for shipping. There are also other smaller factors. I mean, the Red Sea closure works both ways. Yes, it's good because in theory vessels will have to go longer out. But I think over the last few months we have seen increasing optimization of cargoes. The Qataris, for example, swapping cargoes with US producers in order to avoid the long-haul voyages. And while the jury is out there, as to what effect is stronger, there are also minor factors that continue to affect demand for shipping. So I think what that tells us is that we are in an oversupplied market. Demand is not an issue. I think it remains robust in terms of demand for the molecule, but it has not grown sufficiently to offset this increase in supply. And the fact that demand is strong, you can see it also from the pricing of the commodity. I think some of these factors, as some of the new projects come online and the pricing structure changes, they should start to soften up. And as a result, we can see better markets ahead. I think we are probably at extremes right now with 2025 two-stroke ships being fixed across Atlantic in the 20s. If we see, for example, lower prices in Europe and an increase in Asia pricing, that then we could easily see the spot market moving to closer to $50,000-$60,000 per day. It doesn't take much. But for us, especially given the fact that we have the luxury of no exposure right now, there is a silver lining to this market. It's mostly the fact that all the steam turbine vessels that are trading in the spot market or are coming off long-term charters, they simply don't have any place in a market like this. Steam turbine vessels, as you know, represent about a third of the global fleet and were built primarily before 2010. They are significantly less efficient when compared to modern two-stroke vessels, and that's because of their smaller size, of their high boil-off, and of course, the higher energy consumption that they come with. And in the end, charters care about unit freight cost. So today, in a unit, let's say in an LNG price of $12 per MMBtu, you can pay a two-stroke vessels a hire of $85,000 per day for a US to Japan voyage and pay zero to a steam turbine vessel, and the charter will still be better off in terms of unit freight cost with a two-stroke vessel. So what I'm trying to say is that the difference is huge, but because we had good markets in the past, we have seen also steam turbine vessels making decent returns, as many of them have been already paid off. But in this market, there's simply very little business for steam turbine vessels if you can get a nice two-stroke modern ship at $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 per day. So I think that will probably push a lot of the steam turbine vessels over time to the scrap yards or conversion projects. There are certain FSU or FSRU projects. I don't think they are unlimited, the type of conversions, but I think gradually many ship owners will have to decide what they do with their steam turbine vessels. We saw one owner deciding to scrap four ships. We know at least another 10 ships being in the market and seeking potential buyers and are considering also the scrap yards. And of course, as intermediate or special surveys come closer, owners will have to be to take that decision. Importantly, also steam turbine vessels, because of their propulsion system, are extremely expensive ships to stay idle. If you want to have an idle steam turbine vessel and you count fuel as well as OPEX, you're probably looking at $35,000-$40,000 per day just to sit around. You will have to turn off the boilers and choose to go for a warm layup or cold layup. These are not easy decisions because reactivation costs, depending on the type of layup, are significant. And we have seen often ships that will go into layup and then go directly to scrap yards. It becomes increasingly difficult to reactivate ships like that, especially given their vintage, the fact that there are no spares, and the amount of money required to reactivate them. So I think there is a silver lining to this market, which was long overdue, as many of these older steam turbine vessels exit the market over the next year or two. That will help also recalibrate the market at the time that new liquefaction projects come online.
I think we share the same view. So then I think Looking a bit more ahead then, for the longer term demand side, as you mentioned, liquefaction growth is essentially the key driver here. And then we have a new president coming into the White House starting 2025. So how do you see the market developing now under Donald Trump with his pro-energy agenda, and how that should impact the LNG market?
Well, I often joke with investors that CCEC is probably the most levered play on a Trump administration you can find, well, at least in shipping, because we have a number of open ships in 2026, 2027, which is really when you will start to see also the Trump effect. And what do we mean by that? Well, the Trump administration has said that as soon as we are in power, the idea is that we will unwind the so-called Biden export pause, and that could potentially open things up for tens of millions of LNG liquefaction capacity that has been on pause on their path to FID. Now, as a rough rule of thumb, as you know in the industry, is that for every 1 million tons per annum per year of LNG exported from the US, you require about 1.5 to 2 ships, depending on the destination, Europe or Asia. So, if the Trump administration, and if we were to take a good scenario where the Trump administration helps another 90 to 100 million tons of new liquefaction capacity take FID and proceed with construction over the next 5 to 7 years, that could, of course, mean another 150 plus ships. So even if you look at the FID liquefaction capacity going forward, so without taking into account Trump 2.0, the market is actually quite well balanced. We have on order about as many ships that we will need for the current liquefaction projects that are proceeding and are being constructed. So Trump 2.0 could supercharge demand for shipping, and hence, you could argue what Trump 2.0 means for other shipping segments, but I think for LNG, at least LNG shipping and LNG liquefaction should be a clear winner here.
Yeah, well, that's certainly interesting. But apart from the US, then, do you see any liquefaction growth elsewhere apart from what's been announced lately with Qatar and the likes?
So, apart from the known projects or FID projects, we know that, of course, Qatar is also considering a further expansion that will probably come over the next year or two. We have had Saudi Arabia that is considering now exporting its natural gas that has been used previously in the domestic economy as they expect to cover their energy needs from renewables. So natural gas in the form of LNG will be now a commodity that they will want to export. And there, I think this project is expected to materialize or to be announced quite soon. There are also other wild cards that are more exotic. Russia, for example, I think just like Europe, Russia has also taken its lesson that it should not depend on one importer for its natural gas. So it's quickly building its capacity to export natural gas beyond Europe, and that means LNG liquefaction capacity. There is, of course, the Arctic projects, with Arctic 2 being sanctioned, and this has, of course, affected production. But who knows, in 5, 10 years, or even earlier on, depending on geopolitics, we might see some of the sanctions being lifted and some of that capacity come to the mainstream market. But also there are other Russian projects. One major project in the Baltic is the Rascem Alliance project, which is quite big. It's expected to be around 13 MTPA of new liquefaction capacity, and is being constructed as we speak. So again, quite important, potentially for shipping once sanctions are lifted. Well, there are also a number of other projects that have been on hold. Mozambique is a good example. There we have seen delays after delays, given the state of things. It might as well be that that project materializes as well. So there are quite a few additional projects around the world that could generate material incremental demand for shipping.
Yeah, and I think, you know, having covered probably the demand side quite well, and as you mentioned, there is a lot of demand. There is also a big order book that is catering that demand. A lot of the order book is already committed to projects. You are one of the few who has a large chunk of vessels that are not committed. But then just talking about the values with the market headwinds in the short to medium term that we have, what's your view on the new building prices for LNG carriers going forward? And would you be incentivized to add to your order book at some point there?
We think that new build prices will remain around this zip code. We have seen just 2 weeks ago a couple of ships being ordered in the region of 255 million for delivery in 2027. Given the lack of shipbuilding capacity for large ships, and even less so for sophisticated vessels like LNG carriers, as well as the long-term macro picture that we discussed in terms of demand for LNG projects from 2028 to 29 onwards, I don't expect any major correction in the prices of LNG carriers. I think we would probably see prices now stagnate around these levels and potentially see the next wave from 2028 onwards. In addition to that, and that's there is also the replacement cycle. Recently, we have seen in the market utilities from the Asia Pacific region come to the market and take ships on long-term charters. Some of the new builds that were recently ordered were on the back of this. And those orders were mostly to replace steam turbine vessels. So if you add the overall demand from projects as well as replacement tonnage and the potential Trump 2.0 effect, I think we are in a good place. We, as you pointed out, have about 50% fleet growth from the first quarter of 2026 to the second quarter of 2027. So I think we would like to remain disciplined and see some of our ships fixed before we look at ordering new ships again. But for sure, the long-term fundamentals are quite attractive.
And then from new building prices to secondhand values, given that there is a, let's call it soft patch, how do you see secondhand values holding up?
As far as two-stroke ships, the replacement cost that dictates up to a very large extent the whole secondhand curve. So as long as new building prices hold up, we don't expect to see any major change in second-hand two-stroke LNG pricing. Where I think we will see a lot of pressure, and we have seen it already, is predominantly in steam turbine vessels. We are already seeing a multitude of steam turbine vessels in the market that cannot find buyers, and also TFDE vessels that were lifted by the market of the last 2 or 3 years. Was a very good market. They did quite well, but TFDEs, they're also quite impaired in terms of earnings compared to two-stroke vessels. They also have increased methane slip. So we expect also the TFDE vessels to see some asset price pressure.
And then I guess summarizing these questions, does the short-term weakness in the LNG market create any opportunities for capital clean energy carriers?
Well, as I said, I think the idea is to start fixing our existing ships before we look at new opportunities. We are quite disciplined in the way that we look at our returns on our invested capital. But of course, never say never if they are, for whatever reason, distressed opportunities out there that make a lot of sense. Because we're a big believer in the long-term fundamentals, we might look at the odd opportunity. But right now, the idea is to remain disciplined.
Very good. And I think that's, covering the LNG side of the business quite well. Perhaps we can move over to the other side of the gas carriers that you have on order, at least, starting with the medium gas carriers. And I think what I would like to know is a bit more on the rationale behind ordering the MGCs. Is it, the emerging clean ammonia trade that excites you the most, or is it the sort of the conventional trades? Can you add some comments to that?
I think what we like is the optionality. Is the fact is that these the MGCs are that we have on order are very nice dual fuel LPG vessels, 40 and 45,000 cubics with energy saving devices, very high specification, and they are very attractive to charterers in the LPG market, which is, if you want, their base market. This is where you would expect ships like that to trade. But at the same time, they give us the option to be active in the emerging energy transition markets, especially with regard to low carbon ammonia. Many of the discussions we are having today, they revolve around the carriage of ammonia on those ships. In the industry, there is a misconception because we have seen a lot of VLACs being ordered that the ammonia trade will predominantly be on the larger vessels. If anything, at least in the short to medium term, there is lack of infrastructure to accommodate the very large ships. And the blue and green ammonia producers are very much focusing on MGCs, at least for the first phase of that trade. So we are having discussions with energy companies that like this optionality, this flexibility, whereby they can potentially trade these vessels into the LPG market, and then as their trade grows, they can go into the blue or green ammonia trade. But again, importantly, these are great ships with dual fuel capabilities. Again, it's all about delivering the lowest unit freight cost possible to your charterers.
Can you say that you are already in discussions with larger energy companies? So is it a strategy to do long-term employment for these ships, or do they trade more of a spot trade at the start of the once they are delivered?
While it's still relatively early days for these vessels, and we are having many different discussions, I would expect that there will be a combination of employment strategies. So some of the ships might go to long-term charters from day one. Some of them they might trade in the more traditional LPG market, and then subsequently, if it is attractive, go into the ammonia-related trades more into 2027 or 2028 onwards. I mean, we have seen the first developments here with demand out of Korea and Japan for power production with hydrogen or effectively ammonia, and already the first tenders that will effectively generate demand for shipping ammonia into the Asia Pacific region. So all that is happening as we speak. So we expect that we'd want to retain that optionality. So have some ships in the LPG market and position ourselves for these emerging trades.
And then talking about emerging trades, perhaps the most exotic part of your fleet, that's the handysize carriers with the option to carry liquid CO2. And I'm just curious, how has the interest been after you announced these vessels? Because they are the only vessels in the order book now that are open, not committed to a specific project. So I imagine there's a lot of interest.
Indeed, and it has been a very interesting 18 months or so for us here since the idea first arose to order those ships. We have engaged in dozens of discussions with a number of different stakeholders in the CCUS value chain. It has been energy majors, traders, storage providers, emitters, hard to decarbonize industries such as cement, refineries, chemical producers or manufacturers, many stakeholders that we wouldn't necessarily deal with in our other trades are active in this segment. And we have this rare honor in shipping to be part of putting together a supply chain. So it has been an extremely interesting process so far. And the discussions, they span the different continents. Of course, Europe and Asia Pacific are the places where you see the most interest for CO2 shipping. The US is probably going to be big in CCUS, but given the availability of onshore storage, shipping requirements will be more limited. Overall, when it comes to CCUS projects, just like liquefaction projects and other projects of the sort that depend on subsidies or regulatory frameworks, they have been lagging behind in terms of their original timelines, but they are moving ahead. Many of them have or are very close to reaching FID. They have subsidies in place, especially here in the European Union, or are benefiting from the EU ETS markets plus domestic carbon markets that further subsidize the price of carbon. We have ongoing discussions with a lot of these projects. And the reason that we decided to move quickly is given shipyard capacity today for ships like that, which is very limited, lead time for liquid CO2 carriers, especially if you want to add a design phase, might be up to 3 years. And certain subcontractors for specific parts of a vessel like that, especially the specialized tanks that liquid CO2 carriers have, might not have the capacity to produce more than a number of ships per year. So when you look, let's say you fast forward into 2030 and you look at the projections analysts for this market. Europe alone has a target of around 60 to 70 MTPA of capturing CO2 by 2030. Southeast Asia, as well as Japan and Korea, have combined projections of more than 100 MTPA by 2030. And even if you are very, if you are very conservative and you take a fraction of that demand to materialize by then, again, you will see that you will need dozens of liquid CO2 carriers, while in reality, the order book of non-committed liquid CO2 carriers is four ships, which is the four ships that we own. So I think there is a lot of promise, and it's also a very exciting industry to be in.
Yeah, certainly. So it's going to be very interesting to follow that market in particular. We're closing in on the end of this this discussion, but I think just on the financing, you have a slide on your present or in the presentation on your own website that entails sort of the financing of the new order book, and that you are at least on your debt assumptions fully funded. But can you just give us a flavor of how the banks are looking at the new builds? Are they more keen to invest or to finance LNG carriers, or do they like the potential of the liquid CO2 carriers the most? What's the or sort of the appetite in general for your order book?
Overall, as a general note, the funding background remains very constructive and positive for corporates like ourselves that have a long-term history in shipping with our track record. In the end, shipping memories are long, and people know how companies have behaved in both good and bad markets. So what we have seen is that our lenders, they very much want to finance our projects, and they believe in what we want to do. But having said that, I think that gas assets are particularly attractive to many financiers today. The reason is there are many reasons, and some of them are simply the structure of the charter market. I mean, in the LNG business, you tend to see more long-term charters than in other segments. But I think part of the attraction is also the smaller carbon footprint of LNG and the concept of LNG as an energy transition fuel. We have dealt and we deal with many different sources of finance, commercial banks out of Europe, Asia, leasing houses in China and Japan, tax equity. We have placed two bonds here in the Athens Stock Exchange for 250 million euros. So there are multiple sources of finance for us, but I think we see good traction. Liquid CO2 carriers are particularly interesting for many of the financiers. Of course, it's a new asset, but once they understand the flexibility of the asset that we have put together, so it's an asset that can trade in the LPG market, the ammonia market, but also carry liquid CO2 and be well positioned for this industry, I think we have plenty of demand for financing this type of assets. Overall, I expect that over the next quarter or two, we'll be able to say much more around the financing. A lot of that is being put in place as we speak.
All right, so that's going to be very interesting to follow. Jerry, I think we could spend all day sitting here talking about the capital clean energy carriers, but that marks the end of today's discussion. Really appreciate that you took the time to discuss with us and the listeners, and thank you for coming.
Niels, thank you for doing this. It has been great. Capital Link, thank you also for hosting us. I hope our audience enjoyed this and happy to do this again.